Hello everybody, James here, Storytime with Dutch Mantel, episode 67.5 or Ask Dutch Anything 11. I've got really good at getting these numbers. I'll do the plugs very quickly. I've got two books, but most importantly, Dutch has got two books. There they are over his left shoulder, The World According to Dutch and Tales from a Dirt Road. If you want to get them from Amazon, unsigned, you can. If you want to get them signed, you email dirtydutchmantel with two L's at gmail.com and you make your request there. He also has certificates and such that you can make your request with as well. I have a podcast with Shane Douglas, Franchise University with Shane Douglas on all podcast platforms.
That's easy for you to say.
Yeah, it was. Give me five goes, I'll get it out there. And also on Shane Douglas Official, the YouTube channel, which is taking the podcasting wrestling world by storm. Now, instead of doing... by the way, yeah, of course, this is your fan questions for as long as we've got time to do them for. If you want to send in a question for crime's sake about what 70 people did last week. So if your question doesn't get answered, then hey, join the club. Most people's aren't. But keep on trying. Questions for Dutch at gmail.com and you send your question in for there. Now, the first question, Dutch, is from me. Would you like to watch the Scott Steiner maths promo from Impact?
This is about a 20-year-old interview.
2008, so 15.
Okay, 15.
I'll tell you.
Yes, I would like to see that. It's a great interview.
Let's do it. Okay, and we're back. See, the second I put that video up there, you started laughing and saying, look at little Petey there.
Oh, yeah. Okay. I won't say anything.
Are we ready?
Scott Steiner, it's going to be a three-way for the heavyweight title at Sacrifice between you, Kurt Angle, and Samoa Joe. Now, before you get there, you have an important step tonight as you and X Division champion Petey Williams take on the unlikely duo of Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe.
You know, they say all men are created equal, but you look at me and you look at Small Joe, and you can see that statement is not true. See, normally if you go one-on-one with another wrestler, you got a 50-50 chance of winning. But I'm a genetic freak, and I'm not normal. So you got a 25% at best at beating me. Then you add Kurt Angle to the mix, your chances of winning drastically go down. See, the three-way at Sacrifice, you got a 33 1/3 chance of winning. But I got a 66 2/3 chance of winning because Kurt Angle knows he can't beat me and he's not even going to try. So Samoa Joe, you take your 33 1/3 chance minus my 25% chance, you got an 8 1/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. But then you take my 75% chance of winning if we used to go one-on-one and then add 66 2/3%. I got 141 2/3 chance of winning at Sacrifice. See, Joe, the numbers don't lie, and they spell disaster for you at Sacrifice. See, but I'm going to break it down for all you ladies. Would you rather be with me, or would you rather be with Joe?
I think Joe's kind of nice. I mean...
See, you're one of those girls that like romance. I'm going to talk to all my freaks out there. Would you rather come home to me, a genetic freak, to be satisfied every night, or go home to that fat-ass Small Joe? See, tonight, we're going to win, and I'm going to be the world champion at Sacrifice. Come on, P, let's go.
Scotty, just like you always say, Big Papa Pump has got your hookup. Well, Maple Leaf Muscle is who you need to look up. Holler if you hear that.
That's a classic, isn't it?
Oh, it's a classic. 141.5% of winning. That new math, I mean, I remember I was there the day that he did this interview, and I don't know where he got the concept or the premise for it, but I was listening and I was rolling because if you're listening to him and the odds of winning, he had a great concept and he did it well. And you see the girl standing in the back.
Mm-hmm. Raka Khan.
That was Raka Khan. Where I think she ended up suing a bunch of people, right?
Yep.
And she sued like, what, 20 or 30 people?
Oh, no, and no. I think it was about 1,000. I'm surprised you didn't make it into the list.
Well, fans, if you want to know about that girl in the back, her name is Raka Khan, and she sued a bunch of people about a bunch of stuff, and it actually went by the first court. The court let it through, and then I think she finally, when it got to where it needed to be really judged on, that they kicked it out. But I would like to say, for the point of transparency, that I was not on the list to get sued, which surprised me, because this was all in her TNA days, and it's quite a story about that girl. So, rock a con.
Who was the interviewer? The blonde girl.
The what now?
The interviewer who was holding the microphone. Who was she?
I can't think of her name. I haven't seen her since. She was like, I forgot even who hired her. She was a nice girl, and she wasn't a bad interviewer. So, what was the other girl they had that? The blonde, she was a blonde too.
The original one was Goldilocks.
Goldilocks, that's right. Mm-hmm. So, and we've talked about her before, right?
Yeah, we took. In fact, last week or the week and a half ago, whenever it was, she refused to take the Black Hole Slam. But before I forget, with Scott Steiner, did you ever see the episode where he was guest ring announcer for the night?
I did. I was there. He was a, and I forgot how that ended up because. Did you enjoy it?
That was nonstop hilarious the entire way through.
Oh, he's funny as hell. I think he's funny and doesn't really mean to be funny. But Scott is the type, he likes you till he doesn't. And when he doesn't like you anymore, you will know about it. I always got along with Scott. I thought he was hilarious. And he always treated me. Because I was a veteran when he got in, and I helped him when he's coming along, and he's always kind of liked me. And I could tell he liked me because when I was with him in WCW, they would give that clothesline off the shoulders of his brother. Oh, God, you're talking about a hellacious bump. But they never – I've seen him hit some guys. I've seen one do a double flip going back, but at least with me, bam, it was easy. So I just took my own bump, and because I said, guys, if you hurt me, what is it going to do? If they'd have hurt me, I'd have had to sue the whole company, because I'd have been like Sid. If you tell them you can't take it, and then they insist you take it, then you get hurt. Well, you've told them. Mm-hmm. And the promotion is at blame. But I never went down that road.
Yeah, and that spells disaster for you at Sacrifice.
No kidding. And because I only got like 141% chance of losing. So, but I've had worse odds. So I'm going to go in there and I'm going to take the battle to you, buddy.
Oh, I'd love to have Scott Steiner on one day. We're going to move on to finally your questions. Now, this is going to be a very, very quick one. Derek Allen. Greetings. What cigar does Dutch smoke?
Well, I'm going to tell you that right now. But a part of that question is wrong already. I've never seen a flame to this cigar. So I don't smoke any cigars. It's called...
You nibble them.
Baccarat. Is that B-A-C-C-A-R-H-E?
Sounds right. Yeah. Same and as a casino game, in fact.
It says it must be in Dulce Far Niente. What's that mean? Dulce means sweet. I know that. Mm. And I don't know what it says 1871 on it.
And so it's old as well.
I don't think it was made in 1871, but. And where was this made? I think it was made in Cuba. That's a Cuban cigar.
Are they still legal there?
Oh, you can still get them, yeah.
Next question. Will, good afternoon, gentlemen. Love your guys' show. Show guys, maybe you mentioned it. But anyway, Dutch is a legend and love his stories. Now that we've heard Dutch's opinion on Hulk Hogan's album Hulk Rules, how does it compare to Randy Macho Man Savage's rap album Be a Man? Which one would be on Dutch's playlist? Great show, you guys rule. Now, previous to this show being recorded, I forced you at gunpoint to listen to Be A Man, the diss track by Randy Savage on Hulk Hogan. So why don't you take us through it?
Well, if I had to have any one of those on my listening list, I think both of them will be just rejected straight out. I didn't like the Hulk Hogan. Do I sound okay?
You sound lovely.
You may have to edit this.
Oh, okay.
1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. And what was the question again?
Oh, yeah. Of which of those two songs would you have on your playlist if you had to?
Well, I wouldn't have either one of those songs in my playlist. But I think if I had to have one, I think I would have the Randy Savage one on there because I've known him for so long and he was a friend. And you know, I think his death, when he died, I think I was notified of that when we were actually, when I was in TNA and we were getting ready to go into taping for that day. And I knew Randy and worked with him a lot of times when he was just breaking in. We were in Atlanta. And I think his death bothered me more than any of the others because I knew him better. And he was still a relatively young guy. How old was he when he passed away?
Maybe
55.
I'll have a look. You carry on.
But it bothered me because Randy in wrestling, he never tried anything that he didn't give 110%. Baseball, the same way. Mm-hmm. Wrestling, the same way. He was going to work his way into the main event. And he wasn't a super big guy, but he had that personality. And he worked his way in. So, but if I had to have a song, both of them suck, by the way. But if I had to have a song that I just had to listen to, they said, you got to pick one or the other, I would pick Randy Savage's song. Both of those songs, I think Hulk sucks worse. And I don't know why I'm saying that, but it does. I can kind of put up with Randy because, you know, I've traveled so much with him. I remember one time I was going down the road with Randy, and he just looked over at me and he says, you know, I got a good mind just to pull over and beat the shit out of you. I says, what? He said, you heard me. I think he was serious. I really do. I says, well, there's nothing between you and the side of the road but air. If you want to pull over, pull over. And he kept driving and never brought it up again. So when somebody just tells you that out of the blue, you got to say, what the hell possessed him to say that? But great guy, but I don't know why he said it.
He was 58 when he passed away. Before we move on, I want to maybe quote some of the lyrics from Randy's rap diss on Hulk Hogan. Hot diggity damn, Hulk, afraid you set it off. Used to be hard, Hulk, now you're done, turned soft. Doing telephone commercials, I seen you dancing in tights as a ballerina. I knew all along you had those tendencies because you've been running from macho man like you got a disease. Dude, please, your pay-per-view event was a joke. You're avoiding Randy Savage because you know you'll get smoked. Come on, that phony fight. The Rock spanked you fast, but when I challenged Hulk Hogan to a real fight, he passed. That's about enough of it.
That's it. Wait a minute, what was the part about the Rock? He had a match with the Rock?
Yeah, so I think it's referring... So this came out in like 2003, so this is a year after the big WrestleMania match with the Rock and Hulk Hogan.
I don't know where I was in 2003.
I know where you were. You were in Puerto Rico still, in 2002 anyway. With that being said... Is it true that Randy always spoke in that voice? Because it seemed like I'd blow my throat out in 4 seconds doing that impression.
Oh, yeah. We got a letter, a suggestion that people told me not to bring up things that I've talked about before. Randy, he was the macho man 24 hours a day. He started out as Randy Papo, went to, Randy Savage, then he was Macho Man Randy Savage. And he was Randy Savage at 6 o'clock in the morning, and he was Randy Savage at 5:59 a.m. the next morning. So all day long, he never left being a Macho Man character. So when And he talked like that too on the street. Oh, yeah. But a lot of times when he was just different. Different. And when you had a match with him, brother, he would wear you out. Because if you weren't in shape, you couldn't go. You couldn't go but like two minutes with him, 3 minutes, because he'd blow you up. And once he blew you up, thank God I never blew up with him, because I would be helpless. And he would be stomping a hole in me. But back in those days, I was in shape and I could go. So, and I hung with him.
I'm sorry.
Tough guy.
I think I've asked you this before. Do you have any idea what the beef between Hogan and Randy Savage is or was?
It was Miss Elizabeth. I'm pretty sure it was her.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they were doing that thing on, what was the Saturday Night Live? Was that what it? No, not Saturday Night Live. What was the Saturday Night Show called?
Saturday Night Main Event.
Saturday Night Main Event. And they did an angle to where, and Savage and Hogan were at odds, and they were beating the crap out of Hogan, I think. And I think Miss Elizabeth was with Hogan. They was telling, I think. And she went to the back and got, I think she went to the back to get Hogan beating the hell out of Randy.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, she was at the ring with Randy, and she went to get Hogan. Oh, they're beating up Randy, and he came out and they made the big save, because the crowd goes, they go bananas, and now you got these two guys and they've been beefing back and forth, and now will they join up to fight these guys? I forgot who their opponents were. So Miss Elizabeth was instrumental in getting them back together, but it all started over, I think, the attention that Hulk was showing Miss Elizabeth, because Randy was very, very protective of her, always. When they would go on the road, they'd get a car, and Savage was very, very cheap in spending money. He'd get the lowest price car they had. He'd get like the $9, the $9 a day car, you know, and be a small car. And they would ride together. Of course, they were making money, because Miss Elizabeth, she was making money too, just by appearing on the shows. So then they get one room, they have one car, and that's how they would go on the road. And from what I understand, Hogan was caught talking to her somewhere out in the hallway. And Randy didn't like it. And he thought Hogan was lying to him about the whole situation. But I think they've had an actual fight, I think, somewhere in Tampa. I think some punches were thrown or something like that. But I don't know if they worked it out before he passed. I think they did. So, but that's what the beef was. It was Mr. Elizabeth. He was very, even when he would go into the building, he would go get him a room. And he would put her in there. And when he left the room to go talk to somebody, he closed the door. Nobody was allowed to go in and talk to her unless he was there. So that's what it was about, I think.
Next question. Frank, can we get your reaction to Blue Kane? Or have you already seen it, or should we show it?
I've already seen it. I didn't see him do nothing. He's just a big guy with a blue outfit on, and he calls himself Blue Kane. So there's not really much to see. He doesn't do anything. And his interview, I didn't hear him do an interview. So there's nothing. This guy's pretty big, and that's it. Mm-hmm. So my reaction to him is,
Next question, Mark Blackard. I heard that Dutch was contacted by someone in WCW to see if he had a talent suitable to replace Sid in the Skyscrapers. If that is true, can Dutch elaborate on the deal to send Mark Calloway to WCW?
Who sent this in?
Mark Blackard.
Mr. Blackard, I'm going to answer your question to the best of my ability. I haven't been sworn in, right?
Should we do that now?
So, swear me in. I've already been sworn in.
That's fine.
But, yeah, Jimmy Cornette, my good friend, was in Atlanta in WCW, and they had a team called the Skyscrapers. And it was Sid Vicious, who I gave him the name too. You know that. Mm-hmm. Sid Vicious and Dan Spivey. So Sid gets hurt or whatever, and he can't go. And so I think Jimmy calls me on a Monday. And they were doing their tapings on a Wednesday, I think. And he said, listen, and he explained the situation. Sid's hurt. Spivey needs a partner. Do you have anybody up there? Because I was booking Memphis and he was on the creative team in Atlanta. He said, do you have anybody up there with you that could fill in for Sid? And I just had, I had Mark Calloway there. And I said, well, I could send you Mark Calloway. I said, how long do you need him? He says, well, we need him till we don't need him. So he's going to take Sid's place on the road. I says, when? He said, well, we need to start him Wednesday. If you got anybody. I said, well, I do have a guy. He's going to be here in about 15 minutes and I'll let you talk to him. He said, okay, call me back. So me and Mark were getting ready to go to, I think, Louisville. I was talking to him on a Tuesday. That's what it was. We were getting ready to go to Louisville, and Mark came in, and I said, listen, Jimmy Cornette just called. He wants a guy to replace Sid in Atlanta, and I suggested you. You interested? He said, well, hell yeah, I'm interested. I said, okay. So I called Jimmy up and I said, here he is. I said, he's about 6'9". He's about 300. Basketball player, in shape. I said, okay, let me see him. Well, not see him. He said, let me talk to him. And he talked to Mark. And Mark got a job in WCW on a day's notice. And he said, meet us tomorrow at Center Stage. I think that's where they were doing, or Marietta, one or the other. Meet us tomorrow there and welcome aboard. So for me, for my good friend Mark, I had him booked too, but I knew he would do a lot better in Atlanta than what I could do for him in Memphis, because hell, Memphis was on its ass anyway. Atlanta had all that Turner money, so he would get paid. So, and that's how he started. And because I knew that once he got down there, Vince McMahon he watched all those shows. He watched all those Turner shows. And when he saw Mark, he would say, because he had the money too. And that's where everybody wanted to go, was WWF back in those days. And he went there. And when did he have his 30-year retirement?
Well, WWF, he was with them in 1990, November 1990, so 2020, I imagine.
Okay, that's something about like that. Right. Yeah, so, and he went down, and I knew once Vince saw him, because after we were down there, we was in Atlanta staying at some hotel, and I walked by him, he said, hey, need to talk to you. I sat down, and he said, listen, you think I should contact WWE? I says, my advice to you is I don't think you need to contact anybody right now, because they will be contacting you. Believe me. And it was only like 3 weeks, maybe 4 weeks later, I think, Vince got into contact with Mark. I think he flew Mark down to Florida to meet him at his summer place down there. And history was made. And he was looking for a guy to put an Undertaker gimmick on. And I always heard that Vince considered The Undertaker an extension of himself. That I can't die and I'm going to do this and I'm immortal. And he gave it to Mark, and look what Mark did with it. And it took time for Mark to really learn what worked and what didn't work. But when he learned it, he was over, and he's iconic, not only in WWF, but in the history of actually the world, really. Because everybody knows who The Undertaker is. Everybody. And if you don't, somebody would tell you real quick.
And so, he owes it to you.
Oh, well, he probably won't say he owes it to me. He owes it to himself. But when I saw him, I automatically said, this guy is, he is what Vince likes. Big guy who can work. So, yeah, and I was instrumental in getting him to Atlanta.
A couple of follow-up questions. How did you finish up Taker on TV, if you did at all? Did you explain his absence, or did you just ignore him?
I ignored him, basically. He just wasn't there. And I didn't call him. He was going by, what name was he going was by?
Big Punisher or something? Something like
Not that. Not that. It was something else. But it wasn't Mark Calloway. A pain. Something of pain.
Oh, like Master of Pain or something. I know he was Mark Callis in WCW.
He was Master of Pain. That's what he was.
What was Jerry Jarrett's reaction when you said, oh, I've just sent Master of Pain off to WCW with one day's notice?
Nothing. Because he hadn't been there long enough to get over. You know, I think he had been there and then left and went back to, he's from Texas. He went back to Texas for like a month. And then I think he had met a girl in Nashville, and he wanted to come back. I said, how you just got there? He said, yeah, but I want to come back. I said, okay. And I brought him back, and he took up right where he left off. But he ended up marrying that girl, by the way. So I guess it worked out for him, because he got a divorce from her later. So. I don't know if it worked out or not, but he did get his start in WCW.
Yeah, he had to laser off that tattoo off his neck as well, I seem to remember. Next question, Larry from Tennessee. Hello, Dutch and James. What are your thoughts on the Texas Chainsaw Massacre match on AEW? We both watched it.
Well, I did watch it, and it was in Nashville at the Bridgestone Arena, which is Jeff's hometown. Adopted, well, he was really from Hendersonville, but I knew Jeff. It was a match that actually almost mandated that the babyface go over, but Jeff went over, and I'm watching the match, and it was all over the board. It was everywhere. Then they brought, what was the name of the guy with the chainsaw? The
Leatherface.
Leatherface, he came out. I don't know who in the hell that was, but the match made no sense whatsoever. It was about 10 guys around the ring, and everything was just, I mean, I'm glad it was short. It was short, and get it out of the way. So, and they did. And what did Jeff have on him? What did he get dumped with?
It's like some fake blood or raspberry jam, or so I think it's fake blood.
Well, it looked brown after a while. I thought it was chocolate.
Well, maybe it was poo. Maybe they dumped him with Leatherface's poo poo.
Oh my God. But it was all over Karen, is all over Jeff. And there was like 400 guys on the outside running in and out and doing this and doing that. And what's the big Indian guy?
Satnam Singh.
What is it?
Is it Satnam Singh?
Satnam.
Yeah, something like that.
Satnam Singh. Well, he gave the choke slam to Mr. Hardy, and it was all she wrote. So I'm glad it was short. And let's go.
Hey, I didn't think it was that bad.
And well, here come Freddie. Was he the?
No, here come Leatherface. That's Leatherface.
Here come Leatherface. And he didn't really do anything. And he chased Karen around with it. And then he disappeared. I guess And the only reason that they had this match is because they have a video game coming out.
No, I think it's a film.
It's a film coming out.
Yeah, it's like a remake.
And it was to promote the film, but it was. I didn't get it at all. So.
I honestly didn't think it was that bad. I thought it was just fine for them. I thought it was too dark in the back. I couldn't really see what was going on. But you always make that complaint with AEW, and I see what you mean. But I was just like, it's short.
It's like they do it at 2 o'clock in the morning and didn't pay their light bill. It is dark as hell, and you have to pay. Actually, you got to pay attention to see who's in it. But you're right. They have a lighting problem in AEW.
Did you see right at the beginning when Jeff Hardy, like he's just walking around the back. He's trying to get his own name chant going, Hardy, Hardy. And then he walks up to like a sex dungeon on the wall of all these like implements of misery. And I just thought,
Well, I guess the fans were saying Hardy, Hardy. Then he walked in the back and he was out of sight. So they stopped. And all of a sudden it started up inside. Hardy with about 10 guys doing it. And then all of a sudden, Jeff comes out of nowhere and attacks him. And since Jeff attacked first, then he ends up getting the dog crap beat out of him. And then he got dumped with something. Then they went back to the ring. I didn't even see him go back to the ring. Then they got in there. And now what they do in the arena, folks, they'll put it on their big screen, so the people in the arena, they see what's going on, and then they come back to the ring, and it wasn't that bad, but I just didn't quite understand it.
We'll move on. Duck from Greensboro. It drives me crazy seeing a wrestler hit their opponents in the head with a barbed wire flaming baseball bat, but they immediately get up, or someone takes a powerbomb through a table on concrete but jump right up. Why is selling such a lost art? Is it just not being taught anymore? Thanks, and keep up the awesomeness.
Well, everybody's trying to show how good they are at the acrobatics of wrestling, I guess. They do a lot. You don't see this, and I'm not knocking AEW, but I'm saying they do a lot of things that are unnecessary to do. You don't really see that in WWE because the agents will stop you. In AEW, I'm hearing that the talent will not listen to their agents because they think the agents are in the past and they're blasé and they don't know what they're talking about. But anyway, they just overlook them. I saw a guy on AEW. He was going to give a clothesline, but before he gave the clothesline, he did a front tumble roll. And then he went and clotheslined the guy. And I'm thinking, would you really do that if you're really in a fight? I mean, you hear that all the time. Why would you do the front row and then clothesline the
guy? Do you know who did it?
Who did that?
CM Punk did it. I saw him do a flip over the ropes, and then he nearly lost his balance, and then he did the clothesline.
Well, that was a botch. He tried to go over and hooked his foot, and he almost fell in, and then he gave the clothesline. But he didn't, you can see him jumping over the rope. You can kind of see that. But to do a forward roll and to give a guy a clothesline, that's what the guy is talking about. Who are we talking to now?
We're talking to Duck from Greensboro.
Hey, Duck, I agree with you. A lot of things are unnecessary. But unless you want to make the talent kind of understand, try to make it look as realistic as possible, you're barking up the wrong tree. I'm agreeing with you. A lot of things are, I mean, you hit somebody. What if you threw a grenade in his pants? Boom, it goes off. And then he comes up and wins the match. What's the purpose of the grenade? It don't make sense. So, but when you go, I've talked to guys like this. What'd you do that for? Well, I thought it would look good. I said, it's stupid. It is stupid because we're trying to not convince people, but we're trying to hold down that this is all contrived stuff anyway. And you go out and you do something like that. And they may not say nothing, but then they go off with their little buddy saying, that Dutch, he don't know what he's talking about. He's back in 1974 somewhere. And a lot of ways they're right, but we didn't have those $1 million budgets to produce TV. We just had two little handheld cameras and an announcer, and then we still went out and sold out. Well, not all the time.
Hey, enough though. Enough.
Oh yeah, we did.
Next question. Worked. Harry, I have two questions if you don't have an answer for the first question. Number one, there were rumors that at one point Sid Vicious had a pet squirrel, and that on a dare from the boys, he shoved the squirrel down his trunks. Is that true?
I never heard it. I've heard that old joke about a squirrel in your pants or something, but I don't think Sid did it.
So all the times you hung around Sid, he never brought a squirrel on the road with him?
No, okay. Never did.
Number two, if that isn't true, do you have any stories of wrestlers either shitting, pissing, or puking up during matches? Thanks.
Oh, there's one on the internet. I can't think of Andre did it to him. I think. I was thinking about this earlier, but he had him in the... Pause it a second.
Okay, one sec. Back to you, Dutch.
Yeah, there is a... on YouTube, I think, there is a... there is a clip of Andre the Giant and Bad News Brown where Andre was drinking extensively in the dressing room, and he'd been drinking all day long. And somehow he gets Bad News Brown in the corner and turns around with his back to him. But unbeknownst to Bad News Brown, he just couldn't hold his feces. Oh my God.
Is there a video of this?
There is a video of it.
Do you want to watch the video?
Does it say that?
It says Andre the Giant poops on Bad News Brown in Mexico 1992.
That's it.
One sec. Okay, sorry to disappoint everyone. We can't find the video. So you don't think it was in Mexico then?
I think it was in Canada. Because I think Andre would be working with some Mexican heels, probably, in Mexico. I think Bad News Brown was working with him somewhere in Canada. I'm saying it's the Hart territory or in Calgary. And somehow he'd been drinking all day long, and he had a little bit of a loose, I love this word, stool. and he got Bad News Brown in the corner and backed up to him. And I think he ripped some air first, and then all the rest of it, and here it come. And he got some of it, enough of it, on Bad News Brown. He threw up, and he just left the ring. So that was one of the things that I remember. And I've seen the video of this.
Man, if someone can tell us where it is, please let us know. We'll play on the next one. But for now, the next question, the Reverend Sean Drawn? Sorry, I don't know how to pronounce your surname. From Stuart, Virginia. Hey, Dutch and James, does Dutch have any stories about the wrestler Missing Link? Love the show. It is hooked. It has me hooked, excuse me. Hopes for much success.
Well, I work with the Missing Link in Florida. His real name is Dewey Robertson. And I didn't know him before then, but what a character. And he would take his hair, and he'd hold his own hair, and he'd get in the ring. And I never knew him that well, and he never did interviews. But from what I understand, he was, and I watched him, very good in the ring. I think he was a Canadian too, but I'm not sure of that. Because sometimes you meet people in wrestling, you don't know their background unless they just specifically tell you. But I think he broke in and he was in, I think he worked a few territories in the United States. I think he worked the Mid-Atlantic territory. And I think he worked in Texas. And I had him in Florida. And I didn't have, I think he was there about 6 months.
Yeah, what is it with Missing Link? Because he seems to have a great character, a good body and everything, but he never really seemed to be anywhere for very long. You're right, he was in Dallas. He was even in the WWF briefly, and he just disappeared. Mm-hmm. And he was actually from Hamilton, Ontario, Canada as well.
Well, I'm right on some of his things about him, but...
Did you ever hear the story about, according to Gary Hart, world-class co-booker Ken Mantell, your brother, paid Missing Link to beat him up, and then Link tried to, and then Gary Hart slashed him with the old secret pocket blade and left him sort of screaming in pain.
Okay, you're telling me that my plastic brother or cousin, Ken Mantell, paid Missing Link to mess up Gary Hart?
Yeah, it was a paid hit, supposedly.
In wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
I never heard that, but I did read the rest of that question you wanted to ask me, and he said that Missing Link tried to do it, and Gary Hart cut him with the blade,
mm-hmm.
and Missing Link ran from the ring bleeding.
No, this was in the back. This wasn't even in the ring.
Ooh. And you know what he means by saying that he cut him, right? You know. He didn't pull a knife.
Mm-hmm.
What he did, a lot of times, he learned this from the original Sheik. The Sheik would go into the ring. A lot of people don't know this. And he would get blood a lot. He would tape three of his fingers up with a blade, a little bit of a razor blade, taped to a finger, and if you maybe both of them, so he would have six blades, one to each finger. So if he and he would do this in Japan a lot too. If he had any trouble in Japan, he just reach up and with both hands. So that's probably what Missing Link ran into, because Gary Hart, as well as I don't know him that well, but he carried a gun, and I don't think this may not have been a razor blade. It could have been an actual knife, because I remember guys, when I broke in, they would come in the ring, especially heels, and they would put their bag down, and you'd look down in their bag. If you pass them, there's a gun laying there. A lot of guys, especially the heels, they carried the guns. So, anyway, it was a different world back in those days.
I'm going to ask you
I never did hear that story.
I'm going to ask you one or two more, and then we shall box this one off. Charlie Wall, I was reading an article on the career of Luna Vachon, and it mentioned her work with Mad Maxine. I was curious, and apparently she has her own website and writes books. Had you ever had the opportunity to work with Maxine? And if so, what were your impressions of her and any stories you could share?
Never met Maxine. Never. I saw her on TV, but I never met her. How long was she in the business?
I don't think she was in that long. I remember being really tall.
Yeah, she was a tall girl.
Yeah.
And... she broke in under who?
Moolah. So she's got Moolah. Nothing but bad things to say about Moolah and her time with her, I think.
Well, I thought the things about Moolah weren't true.
Who said that?
The girls that work for her that are highly defensive of Moolah. So Maxine has bad things to say about Moolah, right?
Yeah.
What does she say?
I think it's the same thing that like you heard back in the day, and I think a lot of things have come out about Moolah after the fact and probably before the fact, is that it got to the point that maybe she was pimping some girls, she was keeping them on the ranch and basically controlling them, you know, in the, not in the sexualized sense, but let's say pimping out for work and then keeping most of their wages so that they couldn't go anywhere else and were dependent on her, that kind of thing.
Well, she did that. I know that she, I don't know about pimping her out, but I've heard stories like that, mm-hmm. that she kept those girls highly, highly controlled, and she kept them on her ranch in Columbia, South Carolina, because they were paying her rent on these little bungalows, I guess. So she had them renting from her, and she was their boss. So there's no way they could be behind in rent, because she would just take their money when they would get paid. Oh, this is your rent. I've taken it out. And she'd write it down on a piece of paper what they had gotten. But I heard a lot of really things that weren't didn't show Mula in the positive light that some of the girls claim that she's in.
Okay, right. So we're going to do a tiny bit of a longer episode here. So instead of one question, we'll ask a few more and get us up to the hour or near enough. Next one, Deliverance Hillbilly in Evansville, Indiana. I was wondering if Dutch had any good stories about Playboy Buddy Rose and maybe even a review of the famous blowaway diet. I believe he's probably tried it at least once when nobody was looking. So Playboy Buddy Rose.
I never met Buddy Rose.
Really?
But I did see, I never met him. See, I was always in the South. I was always in the Georgia, the Carolinas, Tennessee, Florida. I always stayed around there, and because I liked it. Going north to Oregon, where Buddy Rose was, and I've covered this before. I looked at it on the map, and I said, damn, this is like a wagon west. I said, that's too far to go, you know? So, but I did hear him that he would come out and he wouldn't, it was a great interview. He would say, I weigh 215 pounds. And he'd have the announcer even in the house shows and weighing in. And then I think Buddy Rose would tell him, he would lean into the announcer and I've been informed, ladies and gentlemen, by Mr. Rose, that he is weighing in tonight at a very smooth and swelt 250. Ah, here they come. You fat son of a bitch. You don't weigh no 215. He got a ton of heat off that because he was the type who would get heat because you want to slap him when you see him anyway. So, but I never met him, but I heard stories about him. And he actually drew some money up in Oregon. Mm-hmm. He really did. So, because he had a pretty good crew up there. And I've heard a lot about the towns were short, the trips were short, and everybody got along. You didn't hear any AEW smut about them or one guy trying to take over and not do this and not do that. And it was like a family from what I hear. They were, I forgot who, Don Owens. He was an easy guy to work for and just go out and do your job and you're okay. So, but I never met Mr. Buddy Rose. Never.
Now, this next question, I know you've got an answer for. I know you've got an answer for it because Thomas McGee. Hi, fellas. Love the podcast. Keep up the excellent work. My question is concerning Johnny Weaver. Did Dutch ever meet / work with him? And did Dutch ever get put out by the Johnny Weaver sleeper hold? Thanks.
I did meet Johnny Weaver. I did actually work with Johnny Weaver. And smooth as silk. I worked with, and I'm not sure of this, but I think I worked with Johnny Weaver and the old timer George Becker. I think that was his name. And Johnny Weaver had the sleeper hold. And I don't think I got put out by it, the match that I had, but I've seen him use it. I've been talking to Johnny Weaver a couple of times and went to sleep. I don't know if that qualifies because he was actually kind of boring, but he was over with the people, drew a ton of money in the Carolinas. And Virginia, and he teamed up with George Becker. I think that was the guy's name for years and years and years. And they would take on those, I mean, those vintage teams like the Assassins. But I think they went as the Bolos then. And then you worked into the Anderson brothers. But by that time, I think George Becker was, he was getting older. So he got out. And then Johnny Weaver hung around for quite a while. But he was like, he worked in the office in Charlotte. And but I know he just drew, he was over in Mid-Atlantic and drew a ton of money. Nice guy. Kind of boring, but he was a nice guy.
Next question, Mark Cole. And I know you've got stories about this fella. Hi, guys. What does Dutch remember about teaming? I didn't know you teamed with him. With British wrestler John Foley in the mid-70s in Knoxville. He would later go on to be the lead heel manager for the Hearts and Stampede. Did he ever try and get Dutch to work Calgary? Thanks.
Yes, I was teamed with... I was in Atlanta with John. And the territory changed hands. That was when I think Jim Barnett was coming in. So they had two offices there. You can read up on this. One was owned by Ann Gunkel, whose husband had died of a heart attack in Savannah, Georgia, after a match with Ox Baker. And I was riding with Ox that night. And we were getting ready to leave. And I remember this. Somebody come up to him. They says, and we saw like an ambulance on the other side of the, on the other, down on another door at the Atlanta Civic Center. And somebody come up and told us that Ray Gunkel has just died after a match. And Ox had a, what they call the heart punch. And so I think he had thrown the heart punch, but he hadn't beaten him with it. And it was a hot summer night. And that was the night that Ray's heart did give out. And he died. Then Ann Gunkel, his wife, found out that all the other partners he had, and it was like Buddy Fuller and some more, and Buddy Fuller's brother and Les Welch, or then even Eddie Graham. He had other partners in this, and they all tried to come to Atlanta and just take over. They were just going to push her out. And she said, screw this. So, and they had money. She had some money, and she started her own company. And they went, I think you had two companies in Atlanta. Then it was called Gunkel Enterprises was one. And the other group was the traditional group called ABC. And what was the question about Buddy Fuller?
Hey, no, not, it was John Foley.
Oh, John Foley. That's where I met John.
All right.
So anyway, 2 years went by and me and John worked in Atlanta, and I was just starting out and I didn't know where to go at first, but Tom Ernesto was the booker and he says, come with me. I said, okay. So I knew him. I didn't know the other people that were coming in, and John did too. And then finally, when the other group won the war, the NWA group won the war, and we were we were sent out. We couldn't work in Atlanta because it was full. And I went to work in Knoxville, me and John, for Ron Fuller. And it was, I learned a lot from him. You know, he was a shooter. And he would tell me stories that when somebody would come to a promotion, say in England, this is where he was from, and they'd say, wrestling's fake. Oh, yeah. Well, you want to try one of these guys? He said, oh, no, I don't do that. He said, well, hey. He would line some guys up. And John would always be on the end. John had a little pot gut on him, and he was always smoking a cigarette. And he says, out of those four guys, you know, you'd have some big guys up there. Which one do you think you can beat? Well, of course, they picked John. He was an older guy. He had a little goatee. John Foley was the worst one they could have picked because he was what they call a hooker. And a hooker in wrestling parlance means a guy that can hook you and actually yank your shoulder out of socket. Well, they'd go in the ring if the guy really wanted to, and John would just beat the shit out of the guy. I mean, he wouldn't punch him or kick him or nothing, but he would roll him around and have him all tied up, and he'd have the guy screaming. And they would say, they would lean over, whoever was the motor, said, "Do you think it's fake now? Tell him it's fake." And every time he'd say, "I think it's out," he'd have him screaming. And John was very, very good. And he offered to show me how to do it. Of course, I politely declined because I felt like I need to train my body for work wrestling, not shoot wrestling. And yeah, I knew John very well. And I think he's passed away now, but I'm not sure. But I knew his daughter. And there's a story about him that I think his daughter was in a car wreck. I don't know if this is true or not. And he paid one of the Hart boys to break her leg so they could sue the insurance company for more money.
Jesus.
You ever heard that story?
No.
Well, you read enough, that'll pop up.
Crikey. No, I've never heard that one before. He died in 1988.
Well, he's been gone a long time.
Yes, and?
And I knew him in, probably in 75.
Did you know that you and he were the NWA Tennessee Tag Team Champions 2 times?
Yes, I did know that.
I mean, you were there, so, I mean, you probably did.
Yes. And Knoxville at the time, that was when Ron Fuller was taking it over. And Ron Fuller had a different way of promoting wrestling. And it was entertaining. It was good. It was believable. And Ron Fuller drew a ton of money in Knoxville and East Tennessee. The matches were, the trips were short. Sometimes the trip would be 50 miles. That was a super, that's almost like going to TV, 50 miles and nothing. You'd be back before 12 o'clock. It was like working a job, a second shift job, but you're back home every night at about 12 o'clock. And that was the way he sold the territories. He wanted to get guys to come in. I don't know what kind of money arrangements he worked with them. But one of his selling points was you're home every night at 12 o'clock. So, and it was a good territory. East Tennessee is great for wrestling.
Very quickly, did John ever try and get you to go to Calgary?
He left Calgary after Knoxville. No, he never tried to get me to go because I was never interested in going. No, he didn't want me to. He didn't ever ask me to go.
Someone needs to send us more information on the whole broken leg daughter thing as well, but we'll do some more research on that, and I'm going to ask you one more question, then we will shut down this bumper edition of questions for Dutch or Ask Dutch Anything. Chuck in Mississippi asks, would Dutch share memories of any, if any, about his tag team breakup feud with Wildfire in Memphis? I liked it.
I don't hardly remember it, to tell you the truth. I remember it, but we were tag team champions, and I forgot how it started, but I don't think I was at TV one day, and I think he said that I had left him, I had stood him up or something, and I forgot how it went, to tell you the truth, but it got over, and... So if you ask me to explain the story, I can't explain the story because I really don't remember that.
Well, give us a story about Tommy Rich then, because, I mean, I've interviewed him, and he's like, what a character that guy is.
Oh, yeah, he is. He is. Tommy Rich, he got in the business. I'm trying to remember how he got into business. And I don't even remember that, but he's from Atlanta, and he has that Southern accent, which actually worked for him. Mm. So when they went national with that Channel 17 at 6:05. Tommy Rich had that hair, young guy. Oh, come on now. Let me tell you, boy. Whatever. But he had such a different voice that he got over big time. And because the whole country was seeing him. And I think a lot of the guys during that time, they didn't realize that they were being seen all over the country. They think that just basically Georgia was seeing them. But I remember we talked about Buzz Sawyer mm-hmm. on our earlier show that aired, well, it's aired now, but Tommy Rich worked a deal with Buzz Sawyer. Oh, it was a hot deal. And they would go to the ring and they would just burn it up for like 10 minutes. And I'm watching the match one night and I forgot where it was. I think it was in Atlanta. And Buzz would hit that ring and first, and he'd be getting the people worked up. And this was before music. All of a sudden, here come Tommy out and the people pick him up. And he'd hit the ring. They call it hit the ring smoking. And he would start in on Buzz Sawyer, and the people, the angle was over. So the people were right there with it. As soon as Tommy started, they'd ring the bell. Ding, 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 ding. Now the match was on. They would fight all around the ring. And I remember about 7 minutes in, I think he raked Tommy's eyes and Tommy was selling. Then he went down to the next turnbuckle. They're outside and he threw up. and because he'd been drinking, I guess. And then he went down there. Then he started back in on Tommy. And Tommy just wore his ass out, starting another comeback on him. And then Tommy threw up. So they worked some more, and I forgot what happened. But both of them threw up, I think, twice. I think both of them, they were both swapping off back and forth, beating the hell out of each other. Both of them kind of threw up at the same time. Then they did their finish. So that was how they started giving them finish. They said, all right, throw up twice and do your finish. That's what they would tell them. But Buzz was over. He really was. You know who doesn't like Buzz?
Quite a few people. Magnum, Undertaker.
Undertaker hates him. Undertaker wanted to beat the crap out of him because he started to train him. I think Undertaker gave him some money. He never took one lesson. And Taker told me, he said, well, I'll tell you what, if I ever find him again, he's going to either give me my money back or I'm going to beat the shit out of him. But he never met him again, so it's too late now.
Just a quick follow-up with Tommy. We never asked this before, but Tommy Rich and the NWA World Championship, he won it when he was 24. It was a very, very brief thing.
Yep.
There were a couple of, like, I don't know, some people suggest some weird circumstances of how he won it, like the board didn't know, the NWA, you know, board of directors hadn't approved it, and Harley Race approved it, or Jim Barnett was a big fan of him, and I don't know. But what did you hear about it at the time and the circumstances around it?
He didn't keep it long. He kept it, what, 2 weeks?
Yeah, something, yeah. He was very, very transitional.
Something like that. Yeah, there were a lot of stories about Tommy and Mr. Barnett, which I don't think are true. Could have been, but I never have received any kind of a justification that any kind of a charge was true. And Barnett did like Tommy Rich a lot. So, and I think if they didn't tell Harley, I think what happened is, I think he gave Harley some money. And he says, listen, I want this. He said, oh, my boy, we're going to draw a hell of a house. I mean, now, and Barnett was gay and made no effort to conceal his sexual preferences. Nice guy, too. And he'd walk in and he was smoking. he was flaming when he came through the door. But very friendly. And I always liked him and always got along with him. But there was no doubt in anybody's mind that met Jim Barnett that he was gay. He couldn't deny that because he had that flaming type you know, charisma about him. And I think he may have paid Harley to take the belt off of him in Atlanta. And we're going to return, my boy. And he will take it back. I think he paid Harley some money. I'm just off the top of my head. And if Harley didn't know about it, he'd have to explain that to the board of directors. And he could just claim that. And, you know, Barnett would say, I thought you said it was okay. And then 2 weeks later, they put it back on Harley. So now they're back on the same page they were on. Does it list Tommy Rich as a legitimate championship?
Oh, yeah.
Champion?
Absolutely.
It
yeah.
Lists it. Okay.
Yeah.
That's good. So, but you can't believe that the board of directors didn't know it. I don't know if, see, Barnett at that time had unusual power. Why? Because they were looking for somebody to take over Atlanta, and he came in with his money that he had made. Oh, he had a promotion in Australia, and they drew tons and tons of money down there too. Mm-hmm. And he had the money. He came in. He took over Atlanta, and so some of your board members was Eddie Graham from Florida, who had Atlanta. With Buddy Fuller, also was a NWA board member. And so he had half the board on his side anyway. So nothing much was said about it. I don't think they tried to, they couldn't punish Jim Barnett any at all. But there were some rumors circulating around why it happened.
Well, my boy, we're going to close down this podcast.
That was his favorite saying, my boy.
I'm trying to think. Don Morocco used to be really...
You sounded a lot like him.
Well, it's weird because Morocco used to do impressions all the time about him as well. And apparently there used to be a photo of Don Morocco shirtless on a horse. And every single time he saw Don, he was like, my boy. And he's like, you and that horse, you know, that kind of thing. And he'd always try and get a photo of Don on the horse, which is... So who knows? Maybe, hey, well, you know, if Don had given him the photo, maybe he could have been NWA champion for all we know.
May have been.
Look, for now, we've done a bumper edition, not major bumper edition, but a bumper edition of... Ask Dutch Anything. Remember, questions for Dutch at gmail.com if you want your questions in Dutch.
Did you forget my question? I wanted to, we'll ask it next time. I think this is the question that fans would enjoy. The most craziest crowds I've ever seen.
Craziest crowds you've ever seen. Okay, I'm going to write that down now.
We'll do that next time.
Craziest crowds.
Okay. Or the most violent crowds, too.
Craziest crowds. Okay, it's on them. But for now, as I said, we've got books, we've got T-shirts, blah, 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 blah. Franchise University with Shane Douglas every Tuesday, and the YouTube channel's called Shane Douglas Official. But for now, I'm exhausted. Right, we the people.
We the people, my boy.